So we left off last week. We were discussing one of the examples that the Gemara gives us in the Kamed of Dalet is actually a reference to a Mishnah in Maseches Gittin about a person who damages somebody else's property, but in a very, very halachic manner. Very lumdish mazik. He's mazik somebody to what's called Hezek She'eno Nikar. He does it in a way that's not even really recognizable to the unhalachic mind, to the unhalachic eye, that there's even damage that's taking place. And one of the examples that's given is Menasech. If a person takes somebody else's wine and basically does something to cause that other person's wine to become no longer fit for use. So the Mishnah says, if you do that, you chayev. The person is chayev for that act of Menasech. What is unclear is what exactly is the case. So the Gemara quotes about Chlokes Maseches Gittin, where the Menasech means literally to pour somebody else's wine in front of an idol. Well, Menasech means to mix somebody else's kosher wine with pre-existing non-kosher wine, thereby, in a sense, prohibiting the kosher wine as well. So which one of the two cases is it? Why should one say one over the other? So the Gemara raises a red flag in Maseches Gittin about the opinion that says Menasech. How could Menasech mean literally to pour it in front of an idol? Isn't that subject to the rule of Kamli V'Dramine? Anytime a person does an action that carries with it a punishment, capital punishment, Dini Nefashos, as well as a monetary obligation to the Mammonis. So come live Ramine, one pays, literally one pays with one's life, one's Chayav Misa, and one doesn't have to pay money. So Gemara raises a question, if you're Menasech wine Levet Azara, that's a Chayav Misa's basin, that's Ovid of Azara, you have Skila for that. So why in the world would you be obligated to pay the money? So that was in fact the reason why Shmuel changed the case. That's why Shmuel said, you're right, that's not the case. Menasech doesn't mean to literally pour the wine. Menasech means to mix wine. There's no chiyuv mitzvah for mixing wine. But what would Rav respond? Rav said that Menasech means Menasech mamish. So Rav responded by saying, no, this is not subject to come of Dramine, because it's not simultaneous. The moment that you picked up the wine, you already became obligated to pay for the value of the wine, and the Chiyuv Misa doesn't kick in until a few minutes later when you actually pour it to the idol. So whenever the Chiyuv Misa and the Chiyuv Mammon are not simultaneous, that's not called Kamei Dramine. So that was the point of contention. That was the Machlokes Rav and Shmuel. What would the din be? A person comes and pours somebody else's wine. Do we apply Kamei Dramine or not? So Shmuel said we do, and Rav said we don't. And the reason why Rav said we don't is because the two actions are not really happening at the same time. So this started the whole ball rolling, which we just barely scratched the surface last week. And that is a fundamental question. Whenever you're dealing with Kamei Dramine, just how simultaneous or simultaneous, just how exactly at the same moment must the two actions be? And that's how we started to learn a sugya in Ksubas Daf Lamed Aleph. So we'll pick up really in the middle of that sugya in Ksubas Daf Lamed Aleph, which sets the stage for everything we're going to talk about now. So the Gemara contrasted between two cases. We'll take a look again in the third of the Mamakamos. Guf am rochiz, the modu am rochuni ben akona. Gonev chelbo shechaver ve'ochlo shuchayev, shekvar ischayev, v'gnei v'kom shevo de isu chaylev. That if I steal somebody else's chaylev, now eating chaylev carries with it an ownership kares. And there was one opinion, we have not the past like that, but the one opinion of Rabbi Nachman who maintained that's also the halach of Kibbutz Ramani, applies to Karis as well. So if I steal your chaylev and I eat it, so Rabbi Nachman says, I'm still chayev to pay for the chaylev. Why? Because I was chayev for the geneva before I'm chayev for the Karis. For the minute that I pick up your chaylev, I become obligated to pay the value of the chaylev. The chiyuv karis doesn't kick in until 5 minutes later when I actually eat it. So it's clear for the Gemara that there's a principle of splitting between the two. Mammon happens before Misa. There's not going to be a ptur of Kamei Dramine. Yes, the Gemara in the second line. Lema pligid Rabbi Abin. Diab Rabbi Abin. Hazorei chetz with chilas arb l'sof arb v'kosh shirayim l'chaso potur. Rabbi Abin taught us that if I shoot an arrow on Shabbos and it goes dalat amos, and in the process of going dalat amos, it also rips through somebody's clothing. So even though one could have argued that the ripping of the clothing preceded the landing of the arrow, so that should have been the equivalent of the gonev v'sachelev, one says, no, it's not true. Potur shakir tzorech anochi. The halacha views that the beginning of the shooting and the end of the shooting is one long, long, long action, and any monetary obligation that was incurred in the interim is covered by Kamei Dramine. So basically, this is the question we left with last week. What's the difference in the two cases? Why is it that sometimes we say the Chiyuv Mammon kicked in first, and sometimes we look at the Chiyuv Mammon almost like a long, 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 long Chiyuv, like a long, long window, and the Chiyuv Mammon will be exempted? What's the difference between Gonev Chelev and Zorek Chetz? That's really the crux of the Sugya and Ksubas Daf Lamed Aleph. So the Gemara presented two possible distinctions. One was that in the case of the shooting of the arrow, it is impossible for an arrow to land without it first taking off. So therefore, the taking off and the landing are considered to be one action, one entity. Unlike the case of the Gonev Chelev, where you could eat Chelev without picking it up. If you get on your hands and knees and you eat the Chelev on the floor, you could theoretically eat Chelev without picking it up. So when action A is absolutely indispensable, it absolutely must be done, it's absolutely necessary, then it's considered to be one long action. When action A could have been avoided, it wasn't even necessary in the first place, so then we say it doesn't merge to become part of action B. That's pretty much the first answer of the Gemara. And then the Gemara gave a different answer. The Gemara says there's a difference, another difference. The difference being that in the case of the arrow, once you shoot the arrow, you can't retrieve, you can't stop the arrow mid-flight anymore. Whereas in the case of the picking up the chelev, just because you picked up the chelev, you could stop in the middle. So since you have the ability to stop, so therefore we don't label it as one long action. So those are the two approaches that we left off with last week in terms of the sugya and ksuba stuff lamed aleph. So now the question becomes, how does any of this relate to our sugya of menasech? How should we look at the case of menasech through the lens of ksubas daf lamed aleph? Should we argue that the person who picks up the bottle of wine and walks over to the idol and pours it in front of the idol, is that covered by kama b'dramine? Do we say that the hagbah is tzorech nisuch? Do we say that the picking up of the bottle of wine is part of the nisuch process? It was an integral part of the pouring process, and therefore kama b'dramine would kick in. Or do we say no? Hagbah l'chud v'nisuch l'chud. When you are magbiya, you chayv in mamon, and now when you're menasi, you chayv in mis, and that's okay, as long as the two are not simultaneous, you can be obligated to pay both. So how do we view this case of nisuch? So we have two extreme cases. We have gonev chaylev, which for sure is chayv mamon. We have the case of zorek chaytz, which is for sure potter mamon. And now we have the somewhere in the middle. Which one is it more similar to? So it tells us that the fourth of the Ramakamas goes through the whole complicated cheshbon. We'll try to sum up the Tosfos a little bit. The Tosfos says it really boils down to what the different reasons are for the distinction between the two cases in Ksubas in the first place. If you're going down the route of the second approach, we'll take that because that's easier to understand. If you're going down the second approach, that it all depends on one factor. The one factor is it stoppable? If something is stoppable at that point, so then it's two actions. If something is not stoppable, then it merges to become one action. So it's very simple. Picking up the bottle of wine and walking over, it's stoppable. Nothing's compelling. Nothing's forcing you to continue what you're doing. It's like the arrow that's out of your control. So Tosa says that since you could stop at any given moment, so then we have to separate between the two points in time and say that when I picked it up, I'm chayv in mamon. When I poured, I'm chayv in misa. And that's not tibla v'dramine. So if you go down that route of stoppable versus not stoppable, then it's clear which direction you're going to go in the case of the nisuch. But if you go down the other route, namely, it all depends upon, was it necessary? Did you have to shoot the arrow? Did you have to pick up the chelev? So Gemara says, though shooting the arrow, you had to shoot it in order for it to land. But when it came to the chelev, you didn't have to pick it up to eat it. You could have eaten it on the floor. So what about nisuch? Is nisuch possible? You have to check with the idol worshippers. Is it possible to pour wine on in front of an idol without actually picking it up or not? I don't know. I guess you can kick it. I'm going to reserve comment on that. So Tosfos themselves are not sure about that. So Tosfos says that if you go down the route of stoppable versus not stoppable, then it's obvious when menasech fits into the picture. But if you go down the other route, that it all depends on, is it Efshah or Efshah? Tosfos throws their hands up and says, we're not even sure. We don't know what the answer should be. So maybe this is all part of the mix. It's all part of the chulin, what Rav and Shmuel are arguing about. That we have this machlokes Rav and Shmuel and Gittin Daf Nanan Beis. We're not sure what the point of contention is. So maybe they're arguing about the two Lashonos in the Gemara. Maybe they're arguing about what the Metzias is, what the facts are about Menasech. We're not quite sure what point they're arguing about, but it's somehow somewhere related to the sugya in Ksubas Daf Lamed Aleph. That's how Tosfos takes us at the beginning. But then Tosfos comes about and he says that maybe we have a whole other approach to the sugya. And maybe we have to go back to Rabbi Abin. Rabbi Abin was the one who got the whole ball rolling. Back to Ksubas Daf Lamed Aleph. Let's read Rabbi Abin again and see another possible approach that's going to open up the entire sugya for us. So back to the third of the Bekoros in Ksubas Daf Lamed Aleph. The second line, the Rabbi Abin. Hazorik chetz betchilas arba l'sof arba. V'kara shirayim balichaso potur. If a person shoots an arrow from the beginning of the Rishus Rabbim to go four amas in Rishus Rabbim, and it rips clothing in the middle, he's going to be potur. And Rabbi Abin says the magic phrase, Shakira tzarech anochehi, because we view the Akira as part of the anocha, it's all the same moment. So Tosus challenges Rabbi Abin and says, I'm not so sure that everybody agrees to Rabbi Abin. We have reason to believe that there may be some opinions in the Gemara itself that don't accept Rabbi Abin. If that is true, that we don't accept Rabbi Abin, then Rav and Shmuel are very easy to read. That is the point of contention. The Machlokes Rav and Shmuel is not about the intricacies of the sugya in Git Daf Nun Beis, but rather it's a very straightforward Machlokes. Is Rabbi Abin's theory right or not? I shoot an arrow, and now we're going to make believe, Akira Tzarech Hanocha, we're going to view the uprooting of the arrow and the landing of the arrow, it's all the same. Maisa, Rabbi Abin said it, and nobody argued on him in Maseches Ksubis. But if we could find somebody in Shas that disagrees with Rabbi Abin, so then we're good to go. Then we know what Rav and Shmuel are arguing about. This is all part of a general theory. Is Rabbi Abin correct or not? So Tosus now has to search through all of Shas. They have to put on press their Google. They just sit through and sit through all of Shas. Bracha, Shab, say it from them. They reach a Gemara in Bava Kamma, and they come to the realization that there must be an opinion in Bava Kamma that itself disagrees with Rabbi Abin. So that's where they take us now to a whole other sugya. So we're going to forget shooting arrows for a minute, forget eating chela for a minute, forget pouring wine for a minute. We have to learn together a sugya in Bava Kamma, Daf, Ayin, Amud, Beis. It's a little bit of a complex sugya. And when we finish learning that sugya together, then we will come to the realization, maybe, that there's somebody who actually disagrees with Rabbi Abin. And if we can find that person, find that sugya, then Menasech is going to be much easier to understand. So let's put everything on hold that we learned until now. Let's start learning the sugya in the fifth of the Ramakamas together. The Gemara is commenting on a Mishnah that appears in the seventh parak of Bava Kamma, where the Mishnah is also talking about an application of Kamla B'Dramine. The halacha is, if I steal an animal, steal a shor or seh, utavacha or mecharo, if I either shecht it or I sell it, so I'm chayav to pay four times for the seh and five times for the ox. My younger daughter was learning, they were doing some stuff for Pasha Mishpat a couple of weeks ago, Pasha Shavua. So she came home with a whole bunch of questions and things about Pasha Shavua. So she had on one of her notes a mistake. It said something about that when you steal an ox, you have to pay four times, and you steal a seh, you have to pay five times. She had it opposite. So as I was going over the homework with us, I said, I think somebody made a mistake here. I don't want to say the teacher made a mistake. Somebody made a mistake. It's the other way around. So, you know, as a three mistake, a 12-year-old, she says, oh, come on, are you sure? I said, I think so. I mean, I can double-check again, but I'm pretty sure that it's five for ox, four for sheep. So she, then at the end when we finished, so she said something to my wife. She said, Abba knows Pasha Mishpatim. I said, listen, I've been saying Shabbat Bava Kamma this whole year. If I can't tell you how many times you pay for an ox or a seh, I should be in a different profession. So I didn't consider that to be such a great, there's no guy involved in knowing that you pay five times for an ox. Okay, anyway, getting back to the story. So the Mishnah says that if you gonav b'tavach umachi, you pay four or five times. So the Mishnah says sometimes you can have a situation where you potter. Why? Come and draw me in. This is what this fellow did. He goes in, he steals an ox, he steals the short, and he shechts it, no less, on Shabbos. So he's gonav b'tavach b'Shabbos. So now the shail is, can we make him chayav to pay the extra times, the extra amount for shechting the shore? The answer is no, because it's come and draw me in. Sheikh B'Shabbos is a Malacha D'Oraisa, so he's Chayef Skila for what he did. So since at the same time he's Chayef Skila and he's Chayef Mammon, he pays with his life and doesn't have to pay the extra money. Kam Le'Bedramine. So the Mishnah compares and contrasts this. And the Mishnah says, Gonav V'Tavach B'Shabbos is Potter, but Gonav U'Mocher B'Shabbos is Chayef. If you steal an animal and sell it on Shabbos, then you still have to pay. Why is that? Because although you're not allowed to buy and sell things on Shabbos, you're not going to have skila for that. Buying and selling on Shabbos is only yachsam b'drabanan, so therefore there's no kam b'drabanan. So you did an aveir chil Shabbos by selling the ox, but since it doesn't carry with the misa, you don't say kim b'drabanan. So gonav v'tavach b'Shabbos, the Mishnah says, is potter. Gonav v'mocha b'Shabbos, the Mishnah says, is chayav. Interesting, the Rishonim point out from this sugya, you see a proof that if you sell something on Shabbos, the sale is valid. you weren't allowed to do it, but the sale b'di'evit is good. If the sale wouldn't be good, then you wouldn't be chayef to pay the dal bay in the first place. So the Rivash brings a raya from the sugya. So I have my store open on Shabbos, and I sell you something to Isser. And then on Motzei Shabbos, I want to back out from the deal. So I come and I say, well, the whole sale should be null and void, because if it was all done by Aveira, so we say, that's true, but irrelevant. And Aveira was done, but the sale is still valid. So get back to the story. So the Mishnah says that God of a Tovach is Potter, God of a Mocher is Chayef. So we ask the Gemara, the fifth of the Rambam comes, Tanya Potter. But we have this one cryptic line of Braisa that says, God of a Mocher is also Potter. And that's a big, big problem. How in the world could Tovach or Mocher be Potter? There's no Kibbutz Rabbinay. So we have to come up with some very creative way of inserting a Kibbutz Rabbinay into this. We have to make what you just did a Chiyav Mises Beis Din. Scratch your head, how are you going to do that? All I did was sell an ox. How in the world is that going to be a chiyav mises beis din? So the Gemara comes up with some very, very creative solutions. So one of them is the follows, Elamar Papa. Ba'oma lo, zirok genevo secha lechatzeri, v'tikna li genevo secha. I stole an ox, and it's now, I guess we're going to have to, let's make it a sheep, because we're going to talk about tossing animals over fences, so we'll make it a little bit more realistic. So we'll... Although yesterday, since we were learning a sugya yesterday in the shir, they came up with the Gemara making a discussion about boar, about whether if you protect the boar for the weight of an ox versus the weight of a camel. So there's a whole pilpul back and forth as to what's considered to be a pshia, not a pshia. It's complicated sugya nafim and beis. So I said in a joke to the boys, I said, I imagine that camels weigh more than oxen. To which I found out afterwards, one of the boys Googled afterwards and told me that the average weight of an ox is 2,400 pounds, the average weight of a camel is like 1,300 or something. So I said, there must have been either smaller oxes or bigger camels in the days of Chazal, so I'm not sure what to do with that piece of information. So, but over here, we're going to assume that we're not tossing an ox over the fence, we're going to toss a sheep over the fence. So the Gemara says that the following case, I stole a sheep, and now it's Shabbos morning, and I'm trying to sell the sheep, I'm getting rid of the sheep now. So I come to you and I say, would you like to buy this sheep for me? So you say, great, no problem. So do me a favor, the lokech, the supposed lokech person who's about to purchase the sheep, says, do me a favor, toss the sheep over my fence, into my property, and that way I'll acquire, the guy's a very big machbid, he's buying stolen goods on Shabbos, but he wants to make sure the kinyan chotz is done properly. So he says, do me a favor, toss the sheep over the fence, and by doing so, it'll enter into my property, and that'll be the kinyan, I'll pay it. You want me to muktzah? Okay. You want me to touch the sheep? You want me to pay your money after Shabbos? So whatever. Right now, just toss the sheep over, so the sale will be complete. So gzrokin of a secha, secha. So Gemara says, aha, that's the case. The mocher, i.e. the gadav, sold the sheep. Now the act of selling the sheep when the kinyan is complete, that's the mechayev of the alav, even it wasn't paid for yet, but the maisa kinyan of mechorah was fulfilled, was completed. So it's that moment of tossing the sheep into the chotzer of the buyer that's mechayev him to pay four times. But guess what? Exactly at that moment, the ganav just became chayev misas beis din for chil Shabbos. What was the chil Shabbos? He threw something, believe it or not, from the Rishus HaRabim into the Rishus HaYochid, because the Rishus HaYochid, the private area surrounded by walls, that's the Rishus HaYochid, and where the Ganav was stealing was in the middle of the street, and presumably that was the Rishus HaRabim. Throwing something from Rishus HaRabim into Rishus HaYochid is Chil Shabbos Deraisa. So it's wonderful, we have a case, we have created a very, very interesting scenario of Kam Levid Ramin as it relates to Mechira. So Ganav and Mocha B'Shabbos could sometimes be Potter. 99.99% of the time, Gan of a Mocha B'Shabbos is going to be Chayef to pay. That's what the Mishnah says. But in this one very creative scenario, you will be Potter, and that's what the Braisa is talking about. So the Gemara doesn't let Rav Papa get away with this. The Gemara says, not so simple, not so fast. In order for this really to work, it has to be Vasachas, the Chi of Misa, and the Chi of Mammon have to be simultaneous. The Gemara says, wait a second. Are they really truly simultaneous? The Gemara questions. Keman k'Rabbi Akiva k'yavakluta k'misha hum chadamia. The Ika Rabbanan gave the matya l'chotze beis okona l'din Shabbos l'machayev ad-matya li'ara. The Gemara says, not so simple. The only way for this halach of kimlud ramene, for the p'tur of the b'raisa to kick in, is that the chiyav misas beis din and the chiyav mamun for mechira have to be literally bevasachas. Is that true or not? So there happens to be an interesting machlokes haterah between Rabbi Akiva and the Rabban about the following shaila. In order for a person to be chayev on Shabbos for carrying, you have to pick up something in one rishus and, in a sense, put it down, place it down in another rishus. What does that mean to place down? So this gets very, very, very fine line. What exactly does it mean to place down? So is it enough that it enters into the airspace of the other rishos, or does it have to literally rest on the ground? So Rabbi Akiva has a chiddush. Rabbi Akiva says kluta kamisha hunchadamia, that even though something hasn't physically landed on the ground, the mere fact that it's entered into the airspace and it's in motion, so a very, very lomdish of physics machlagis, he views it as if basically it stopped already. Items that are in motion from a lachic vantage point, according to Rabbi Akiva, are, it's almost like it stops, starts, stops, starts, stops, starts, up. It's not really moving. It's stopping and starting, stopping and starting. That's considered to be a hanocha, and one would be chay of misa at that moment. However, the Rabbanan disagree. The Rabbanan said, ma pitam, until it lands on the ground, stationary, you're not chay of misa yet. The difference in time will be about half a second, but that's going to make all the difference in the world. Because the mechira is complete once it enters into the airspace. So we'll have our this is our fence, and I'm tossing the sheep over the fence right into your property. So once it gets into your property, even though it's still in midair, the kinyan is over, and the question is, did the chi of misa kick in? According to Rabbi Akiva, yes, because according to Rabbi Akiva, chlut the kamisha v'chadamya. So once it's in the airspace, the chil Shabbos is complete. So that's good for us, because chil Shabbos and mechira happen simultaneous, and that's exactly what the Braisa says, potter. That's kibbutz rabbinay. But according to the Rabbanon, there's a little bit of delayed reaction. The mominus ended once it entered into the airspace. The chi of misa doesn't kick in until 5 seconds later, it hits the ground. That's not kibbutz rabbinay. That's not at the same time. So the Braisa is not right. So that's what the Gemara said. It must be that this Braisa must be following Rabbi Akiva. So the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. The Gemara concludes in the end of the fifth of Ramakamos. But omelo tikdulig lebosech achetanuach. So says the Gemara, no, I can give you a case that it'll be simultaneous even according to the Rabbanon, where the person made a specific condition that the sale shouldn't take effect until it lands on the ground. The person didn't want to acquire the sheep while it's flying in midair. He was afraid maybe the sheep's going to break his leg on the way down. He wants to make sure the sheep landed safely. And only at that point he makes a specific stipulation. In Mamadus, you can stipulate whatever in the world you want. They made a stipulation. The sale will only take place once it literally physically lands. And therefore, it's kibbutz rabbinay simultaneous. Ad kan divrei HaGemara. So one thing we can extract from this Gemara is that Chazal are picking at the moment, on the split second. It has to be simultaneous. You want to explain simultaneous, Rabbi Akiva's version of simultaneous, that's fine. You want to explain simultaneous, the Rabbanan's version, that's also fine. You want to change the case, make up new things, make up stipulations, do whatever you want. But one thing is crystal clear in the sugya, that if there's any gap between the Chi of Mamon and the Chi of Misa, that is not Kimlib Dramidei. That's the only thing you have to walk away with in this sugya. Comes Tosfos and said, what happened to Rabbi Abin? What happened to the magic words of Akira Tzorech Hanocha? Just as when it came to shooting an arrow, Rabbi Abin taught us any mominus that was incurred anywhere along the way, from the minute of the shooting of the arrow till the moment that the arrow lands, any and everything that was ripped along the way, everything is covered by Kibbutz Ramine. Everything is part of Kibbutz Ramine. Rabbi Abin said it doesn't have to be literally simultaneous. Akira Tzorech Hanocha. Why don't we plug in that rule to the throwing of the sheep as well? Let's say the exact same svara. Akira Tzorech Hanocha. When I picked up that set and I started to throw it over the fence, so that's already simultaneous enough. That's close enough. And any chi of mamon that was incurred anywhere along the way, once it enters into the other fellow's airspace, the chi of mamon is incurred. Let's call that kibbutz rabbinay. So what is the difference conceptually between shooting an arrow that rips clothing along the way, that is kibbutz rabbinay, and throwing a sheep that gets purchased along the way, some of that's not kibbutz rabbinay. What is the difference between those two cases? To which Tosa says, the answer is, there's absolutely none. There is no difference whatsoever between the two cases. So why in Bava Kamma daf Ayin Amud Beis, in the sugya of throwing a sheep, does the Gemara ignore Zorach Chaitz? Why does the Gemara ignore Rabbi Abin? The answer is obvious, because other people disagree with Rabbi Abin. Rabbi Abin was not the end-all, was not agreed upon by everybody. And there are two legitimate opinions in Chazal, in Amoraim, in Sugyas, in Shas, whether that svar of Zorach Chetz is correct or not. So half the Amoraim said that Akira Torah Hanocha, that you take into consideration the entire picture, and Kibbutz Dramini doesn't have to be to the split second, as long as it's pretty much the same entity, Akira Torah Hanocha, that's also okay. And the other opinion says, no, you got to go with a stopwatch and see, is the Chiyav Mamon happening at the exact split second as the Chiyav Misa? If the answer is no, then there's no Kibbutz Dramini.
So what's the alternative to Akira Torah Hanocha? I mean, it would seem obvious that when it comes to Shabbos, if all I have is an Akira, or all I have is a Hanocha, I'm not Chayav.
Right.
So nobody can argue that there are two parts to this, and I understand Rav Abin very clearly.
Oh, right.
He sees the action, even though there are two parts to it, as being one long extended action, and anything that may have happened during the process of those two parts is considered part of that and applies to Kimmel.
Right, excellent. So that's excellent. You're 100% right. That's exactly what Rabbi Abin holds. So you want to know how could one argue with that? It seems obvious. So I would counter-argue that by saying that Akira is almost like a prerequisite for the Chil Shabbos to happen. It means if you want to know when am I Chayev Chil Shabbos, at what point do we get am I labeled as you were just Mechal Shabbos? At the moment of Akira, I wasn't Mechal Shabbos yet. I mean, Midarais, it wasn't Mechal Shabbos. I'm Mechal Shabbos, the moment in time is Hanocha. Now, it's true, I'm only Chayef for Hanocha if A, B, and C preceded it. So an Akira was important. Nobody's arguing you don't need an Akira. But in terms of labeling the moment of Chil Shabbos, the moment of Chil Shabbos is one split second. So that's real the Lamedus HaShailah. At what point do we say is the moment of Chil Shabbos? So Tosfos throws the hands up and says, the Sugyas are identical to one another. If you think Kibbutz Dramini in one, then you think in the other. If you're denying it in one, you're denying the other. It says Tosfos, you want to know what the Machlekes is, Rav and Shmuel about Menasech is? This is the Machlekes. It's the same Machlekes. Namely, I pick up a bottle of wine, I walk over to the idol, I pour it in front of the idol. So if you accept Rabbi Abin's theory, that's Kibbutz Dramini. If you deny Rabbi Abin's theory, then it's not Kibbutz Dramini and finish. So Tosfos says there are two different approaches in Amoraim, which is exactly this point that we're arguing about. How do you view Kibbutz Dramini? Do you pick on one split second? Would you open it up to this almost longer window of opportunity to potentially apply Kibbutz Dramini? So everything that Tosfos just told us now is hinging upon that Gemara and Shabbos of Ayinim and Meis, the way they read the Gemara as being an absolute contradiction to what Rabbi Abin said. Hopefully, this time tomorrow, we're going to go back to that Gemara again. We just barely started the flying sheep. We're nowhere near done with the flying sheep. We're going to see that there's an entirely different way in Rishonim to read that Gemara, which is going to give a whole new angle on this entire story. Hopefully, this time tomorrow, we'll continue with this topic.